I call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for June 1st, 2020 to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Capalini?
Here.
Mr. Frye?
Here.
Mr. Hanam?
Here.
Mr. McCann?
Here.
Mr. Richardson?
Here.
Ms. Stow?
Here.
Mrs. Westfall?
Here.
All seven members of City Council are present. Three members are present, four members are present in the City Council chambers, and three members, Mrs. Capalini, Ms. Stow, and Mr. Hanam, are attending via Zoom. A quorum does exist. We have staff members in the audience, Mr. Aller, Mr. Sanford, Chief Snor, and Clerk of Council Sharon Booker is also in the room tonight. And Leslie is hiding. No, she isn't. She's just behind a chair over there, but she is here as well. There are no guests in the council chamber tonight. With that, we have a pledge of allegiance, this meeting led by Mrs. Capalini. Would you like to try to do that via Zoom?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Additions to the agenda. I have no items tonight. Mrs. Westfall?
Nothing. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Members of City Council?
Mr. Mayor?
Mrs. Ms. Stow, excuse me.
I'd like to add an update on a meeting held for the executive committee of Pennsylvania regarding potential door expansion in the two-story building.
All right. It might be appropriate to add that down with item 12A, report of the committee of the whole. That's kind of a report back to that committee, I believe. Are you satisfied with that?
Yes, thank you.
We'll make it A1 right there.
I'd like to make an addition. I'm not sure if this is a question or an addition, but maybe it's a question about council chambers under the COVID-19 update.
All right. When we get there, you want me to add something on the agenda? Is that for something? Council chambers, okay.
Right, maybe just a short discussion.
We're adding that discussion as 5F. Other members of City Council? All right, from staff, Mr. Sanford?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Schreier?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Chief Snor?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Or Mr. Aller?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
All right, is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
It's moved by Mrs. Westfall, seconded by Mr. Richardson to approve as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the agenda for this evening's meeting is approved. Agenda item 4 is approval of the regular meeting minutes from our last meeting on May 18th. Mrs. Westfall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of the meeting minutes for the Sylvania City Council meeting held on May 18th, 2020, as submitted.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the meeting minutes of May 18th, 2020, as submitted. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Onto agenda item 5, COVID-19 update. I'm going to let the department heads give their updates. However, I am interested in your opinions, and I have staff working on it as well. I today received two concerns that City Hall is locked. and I thought we've been operating pretty well on that for a while. We need our staff to be responsive when someone comes to the door. One was for the tax office, one was for the zoning office, and the tax office person was particularly frustrated in that he could not make an appointment to come into the building. And I'm contemplating a change that City Hall can remain locked, both because of COVID-19 and also the current threat against government buildings, but a sign on it saying call or admittance or entry by appointment only. It is appropriate that we set a policy so people can start coming back into City Hall. I don't like the idea of leaving the doors unlocked at the moment, and we'll have a policy that anyone visiting City Hall must be wearing a mask. But I'd be interested in any input you might have to share with me whether you agree with that or not.
Mr. Mayor?
Ms. Dow?
It seems like a sound policy to continue leaving City Hall as a per-appointment access setup. There's still a lot of potential for spread of COVID, and if there's proper signage, it seems like that's a reasonable ask to make.
And that will be a change on the signage on the front and the back doors that admittance by appointment only, and it could be, and we still have the phone numbers there. They could call up the tax office and maybe there can make an immediate appointment, but maybe not. We do have a supply of disposable face masks, which we can hand out if the person doesn't have an appropriate face mask. But banks and other lobbies are opening. I think it's appropriate for us to open as well. But I am leery of just leaving the doors wide open at the moment.
Mr. Mayor,
Mrs. Westfall.
Do you have a sense of what other communities are doing? Are they keeping their city halls closed at this time?
I cannot talk about other cities, but I can talk about Sylvania Township. I discussed it with Oliver Turner this morning. Their lobby is open, but the design of their building is different. You walk in the front door of the township hall, there's a welcome desk behind the window, and all three doors, one going south into the township meeting room, one going west into their offices and one going north towards their zoning, are all locked. You cannot get any farther than the lobby. So they have a secure lobby, which we do not. And we don't pay for a receptionist to sit there, which they need to do. So we are a little bit different. I can inquire of the other city mayors in the area and see what they're doing.
I'm curious if you had any perspective on that.
I don't. But judging from businesses, I think it's time for us to open up again.
Just a question. If somebody wanted to talk to the tax department, could they set up a Zoom appointment with somebody in the tax department? Does everyone in the administration building have the capacity to Zoom with somebody for an appointment?
If they don't, we can certainly do it. Chuck is nodding and saying, yes, we can do that. One-on-one Zooms are much easier than this meeting. We will also go outside to meet with somebody, or now the change is that we will allow them to come into the building with a face mask on. If you haven't been in City Hall, there have been two plexiglass barriers erected, one on the tax office counter, one on the utility office counter. Those make our employees behind those counters feel much better.
Mr. Mayor, excuse me, this is Mr. Hanum.
Mr. Hanum.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think you're wise to continue to minimize the direct person-to-person contact with the public while nevertheless being as accessible as possible to the extent that use technology to schedule meetings and appointments and conduct those. I encourage us to continue to do that. Obviously, we have members in our community that do not have either the technological capability or wherewithal to do the type of Zoom meetings that provide that very close to face-to-face interaction, and to the extent that we can accommodate those folks safely including using social distancing, masks and barriers. I would encourage us to do that. But in no sense do I think that we should go back to business as usual, that for the time being, I think the governor and our Ohio director of health have made it clear that there continues to be public risk and from the COVID-19 matter, and we should comply with those orders and recognize the wisdom of the experts that we are not yet through this.
Thank you for that input. Mr. Aller, you had your hand up.
Yes.
You really need to come out so the rest of council can see you.
Mr. Mayor, I have spoken with Maumee and Perrysburg with their safety service directors or administrators, depending on the title. I don't know which community is which, but one community has indicated that they plan on being closed at least through mid-June, be the earliest that they would open up. And the other community has indicated July 1st, no sooner than July 1st. So those two communities I have spoken to and got that directly from their administration. So.
All right, thank you. We will be open for business and welcome people with appointments. We just won't have the door wide open. All right, thank you for your input. Before we move on to the reports, starting with Chief Snorer, I would like to let all of council know and hear my commendation of the chief's planning work over the weekend. I sent you all an email Sunday morning concerning a planned peaceful demonstration that the chief was made aware of Saturday morning. It's my understanding that Flower Hospital brought it to your attention, and it proved to be, after he contacted the organizers, it proved to be a friendly, peaceful demonstration, and the city welcomes that. However, the chief appropriately contacted me and the director of public safety to ask permission on a couple of things. First, not to allow our forces to leave town to go help somebody else work with them, and also to assemble some contingency plans if that became necessary. Not against the protesters, but against anybody that they attract. That seems to be the pattern around the country, that protesters are allowed, but following them are oftentimes rioters or looters. And we had some downtown businesses quite concerned about that. Everything went well, but let me assure you that if there had been a problem, Chief Snorer had some ability to do that. But he kept those pieces, the SRT teams from Sylvania and from Maumee, out of sight. And it was the right call, the right decision. Both the chief and Captain Eubaker walked with the group. They stayed on the sidewalks. We had police cars out. They helped them cross Monroe Street. They helped them cross Main Street. It was a very quiet protest demonstration in the front yard of City Hall. The group had a few things to say, but then they had an 8-minute and 47-second moment of silence when everybody went down on a knee, which was to commemorate the time that that Minneapolis police officer was on the neck of the person that died up there. And then they all marched back to Flower Hospital. So thank you, Chief. I wanted to publicly thank you. And Mr. Aller, I know you were in touch with the chief as well. Thank you both for your efforts. The city was safe, whatever happened. So thank you very much. Now I'd like to switch over, go through the roster here per your agenda. Chief Snorer, your update on COVID-19.
Well, there's been quite a bit of de-escalation with the planning and contingencies for the COVID-19 threat. Most of the county services that we were tied into have wound down. There's no longer a weekly conference call. They've they had housing for the worried well or people that wanted to stay in isolation from their families as they were working. They closed that down. As of today, all of our police officers are back on their regular schedules, and we haven't had anyone sick or even tested in trouble. We haven't had anyone sick for the duration of the pandemic, and we haven't had anyone who's required testing in at least a month. So we've fared pretty well through the crisis, and right now we're back to normal other than the, you know, the trend that's going on with you know, some of the civil unrest around the county and throughout the country.
Questions or concerns for Chief Snore?
I had a question, Chief. Have you received any reports of either way how this street closure is going?
We have gotten a few calls just from some residents because it's their normal way of travel. You know, there's only so many ways to go north and west in this little corner as everything funnels through here. So we have had a couple of complaints that were called in. But those have trailed off as far. I think people are getting a little bit more used to it. But that's the only concern that I don't know of any safety concerns or problems or congestion issues or anything like that, other than just the use of that part of the paperwork.
Mr. Richardson, I'm sure you look at it perhaps more than I do, but over the weekend I went by it 5 or 6 times, and there were somebody at least 2 of the 3 tables every time I went by. And there were people at every table some of the times I went by. So it's being used, and it's being used appropriately. Okay, let's move on to Mr. Aller for your update, perhaps with a report on city employees. We've been very fortunate so far.
Yes, we have, Mr. Mayor, we have not had any confirmed cases of COVID. We've had 2 employees that were tested because of symptoms that they were showing, and the doctors thought that it was best to be tested. But both of those tests came back as negative. So nobody that we know of has had the virus. So we've been lucky there. I put in front of you just some progression. I call it this. You know, you go through things like this, and then at some point it's time for a history lesson. And if the first part of the virus, the cloth mask, or the fiber mask, I call it, is what we received a bunch of a supply of these from the Emergency Operations Center, and those came to us about May 2nd is when we got the mask. And then not long after that, the Ohio EPA and Ohio Emergency Management Association made available thousands and millions of masks across the state. But we have a large supply of these masks, all white, just straight across top and bottom. And they were provided, as well as several left. And those were provided at, we have about 4 per employee that we were given. All at no cost as part of the state's program. And finally, and those came, we ordered those approximately May 9th, and we got them on May 20th is when we got them. So, and then finally, these masks are ones that the city had purchased. We had actually placed an order for these it was early May, it was May 2nd, and our concern with these was delivery time. Because it was, we had been told 2 weeks. I've been in this business long enough to know that 2 weeks means 4 weeks. So it ended up taking about 3.5 weeks before they came. These masks were, they were purchased. I believe it was like $2.50 per mask. I do believe that these are the most comfortable masks.
That's the most comfortable mask I've worn, and I've had a lot of different ones on. It's because of the way it fits over the crown of your nose.
Yeah. So I am pleased with those, and we'll kind of, employees want more, we'll kind of gauge that. It's obviously, we need to provide some things that they want to hear at work, but, we're not the city supply of mask for the employees, but we do need to make sure that we keep them safe while they're here. So I think those are the best ones that we got. Just a couple items that did have been affected from a service standpoint, you know, we had canceled/postponed shred day and unlimited pickup. Unlimited pickup has been rescheduled for the week of July 27th. That is a definite, will not change. We have two tentative dates right now for shred day. And that, I don't want to announce those dates yet, because I don't want people to get confused, but that date is dependent on the Marathon Classic. We don't want a conflict with that. And so one of the dates that we have is in that time frame. So we're just waiting for a formal announcement on the Marathon Classic, and then we'll be ready to release that date to the public. So, we have both of those rescheduled, ready to go, and we'll be able to provide those services.
Any questions for Mr. Aller? Thank you, Kevin. All right, Mr. Schreier is attending via Zoom, and I've asked him, as usual, to give us a financial update. He has the income tax report through May figures now. So, Mr. Schreier, your report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Fund balances, our general fund operation fund balance is still at $5.2 million. Remember, we started the year at $4.8 million. Our capital improvement fund balance is $10 million currently through the month of May. We started the year at $10.8 million. Income tax payroll withholding, actually, we have some good news. For the year, it's up $70,000 over the same period last year. The first 3 months of this current year are really good. In April, we were down $160,000. In May, we ended up down $22,000 the second half of May, which is we're a month behind, so it is for the month of April when everything was shut down. So that's good news. As far as total income tax receipts, including the payroll tax, we're still down close to $1 million from last year. And of course, most of that is attributable to the tax date changing from April to July. So we should see that come back once we get through the month of July. And if there are any, that's the update. If there are any questions.
I will ask a question. There have been federal action on reimbursements to municipalities, and those discussions continue. There are FAQs that are being issued by different organizations how to interpret the law. I want council to be aware of the fact that it appears the city may be able, or is being offered, a little over $500,000 in possible funding, but we need to determine whether we can apply for those funds or not. Why don't you give a little explanation of
sure.
that?
And the funds we're talking about are our police payroll. It would include fire also, but we don't have fire, so we're talking about police payroll. I have had discussions with our labor attorney. He is interpreting the regulations that act the same way I am, that we, there's a three-step process to qualify. They have to be police forces. It has to happen in a certain time period, because I believe it's March 1st to the end of the year. And the third pet dodge where we're running into problems is that you have to have not budgeted for those wages. And currently, all of our police payroll was budgeted in the original budget. I think that's a catch-all that a lot of communities are trying to get themselves around. But currently, our labor attorney is saying we would not qualify for those funds for the payroll. But we'll continue to look into it and watch what other communities are doing.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, as a follow-up question.
Mr. Fry, yes.
As a follow-up question to Toby.
Yeah.
Does that cover just COVID-related expenses, or if we have unanticipated overtime between now and the end of the year, could that potentially qualify?
Has to be 100% related to COVID-19.
Okay.
Which raises a question. We had overtime yesterday.
That's why I was asking.
And, you know, why did we have overtime? Well, it technically wasn't COVID-19, but that is a contributing factor, no doubt about it. So we will continue to work with our lobbyists to make it applicable so that we can do it. And we'll do the best we can on that one.
I did have one other question, and that was about the gasoline tax receipts, because it's obviously not nearly as significant as the income tax, but still a significant income and revenue stream. Toby, and I know originally with the meeting some 6 weeks or so ago, it was down somewhat, but I didn't know what we had seen since then.
I think it's just actual figures. It was very insignificant, that first month of the second half of the month shutdown. It was less than $10,000, but I'll get you the actual figures through my...
But generally, I'm assuming it's down, but it's not dramatically down?
It is not, no.
Okay, great.
Okay, this is Doug. I have a question for you. So, looking at the revenue report that we got with the financials in today's email.
Yep.
And that shows an expected revenue of the income tax of $3,075,000 and a year-to-date revenue of roughly $1,112,000, and an uncollected balance it says of $1,962,000. What does that mean? Can you explain that?
The reason that we're not on schedule is because of the income tax, the month of income taxes. So in July, it's misleading because at this point we would have had the month of April, and that's the significant, by far, the best month collection-wise. So it's not shown that we're reaching our goal. It's because we haven't got to that income tax statement.
It's the deadline. The due date hasn't come.
$1 million or $1,900,000?
We're short $1.9 million.
Okay.
And that's just the net fund that you're looking at.
Right.
It goes three separate funds.
I understand.
And because those are income tax payments for 2019, you would expect us to get most of those funds in, I would think, Mr. Schroyer.
In July, correct.
In July, by July 15th. If it's not necessarily payroll tax that we're waiting for, it's profits, business profits to come in, or self-employed people, that if they owe money, they're going to wait till July 15th now instead of April 15th.
Business profits is the least percentage-wise. I mean, we're really, most of ours is on the payroll withholding, and then we get more from the individual income tax. So this least significant is the business income tax.
Do you expect most of those funds to come in by July 15th? I know it's crystal ball, I know.
That's what we're expecting, yes.
Okay, that's what I needed to hear. Other questions for Mr. Schroyer? Thank you, Toby. Now on to economic development. Mr. Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We've got a few items that we've talked about in the past and some other updates since prior reports. First, I just want to report about restaurants. We've got about 20 restaurants in the city, not counting fast food places. Just about all of them are open. There's a few that are opening this week that have not been open. Element 112 is going to be opening, but not the next few weeks. They're going to start phasing their operation back in, but probably by the end of June, they'll be back in full operation. All of them have, you know, different setups on their interior based on the requirements and spacing and whatever. So how that's all going to work out, you know, time will tell. The hair salons, the barber shops are all have reopened. I got an update from Helvetica Flower Hospital. They're ramping back up their to 60 to 75% of normal surgery volume, and outpatient services are back open with extended hours. Anybody that was on layoff at the hospital has been called back. So they're moving forward. I actually had an appointment at the Health and Wellness Center a week ago, and it was full. There's a lot of activity going on there. Earlier I talked about Root Learning on Main Street. So they did not lay anyone off. They did reduce hours for some of their reduced pay that the head people and food. There were different costs to save money, but they're not laying anybody off, and that's what they're going to stick to that. You probably saw the announcement I alluded to before about awards, that all the students are going to come back to campus in the fall. That's their plan. They did it in the works for a couple of weeks and they just put that all together. I think that's a real good sign. A place that's been hit pretty bad was Sylvan Studio. Their April and May are their biggest months of the year. If this could have happened in, you know, January, February, it wouldn't have been that bad of a hit for them. They're taking a real hit on majority of their business, so it's not going well for them. The farmers market is going to be tomorrow starting. New sites, Savannah First United Methodist Church, 700 Erie Street.
7,000.
They have different restrictions and things that they have to do for the farmers market. And Kevin alluded to the LPGA. I talked to Judd Silverman last week. He hoped to have known by today. We've not heard back from him yet. So we'll see as soon as we hear from Judd is pretty connected to everybody in LPGA, so we'll know soon. So I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sanford. All right, we have added agenda item 5F, discussion about council chambers. Mrs. Capellini.
Yeah, so I mean, right now our situation seems to be working fairly well. And I can see that everybody's big every other chair. I'm just wondering if we all came back, how that would work, if we need to make some kind of adjustments so we can all come back and sit safely. I mean, right now, doesn't seem like there's anyone in the audience, but we might actually have something interesting to talk about, and we might get some people in the audience. I feel like we should be prepared in whatever, I mean, whether it's extending, even just with temporary tables or the council desk. I'm not really sure, taking some of the chairs out of the audience. I'm not sure what the solution is, but I feel like this COVID thing is going to go on for a long time, and we all need to come back safely somehow. Have you guys thought about it?
There are space for five people up here at the council table to adequately keep 6 feet. And I think it would be possible for two people to sit down in the committee table in front. There's also the staff table over to the north side. Probably two people could sit there. Mrs. Booker is sitting out on the north wall, taking her minutes tonight. And Mr. Sanford and Mr. Aller are sitting in the house. I really think there is room for all of City Council to return when you're comfortable. And I think that if we think there's a subject that might interest the public, we may need to stack chairs or limit the chairs so that they're 6 feet apart. Though family groups that come in, husband and wife can come in, they can sit close to one another. But we would have to somehow limit attendance inside. We might want to set a TV up out in the lobby or something if we think it's going to be an overflow crowd. Are you anticipating a particular item, Mrs. Capellini?
I'm not anticipating anything.
Okay.
That I can think of, but if this is going to.
It's going to happen sometime.
Like even the open house that Environmental Design is going to have, that's in, what, 6 or 8 weeks. I mean, that would be something I think that people would come to.
Yeah, we may want to choose a larger room someplace in the community to do that. Mr. Aller probably wants to speak to this. He's the one that's orchestrated this. I don't, if you haven't been to council table, he's got these 6-foot-long strips of paper laid across the desk, so everybody knows how long 6 feet is. 6 feet's bigger than a lot of people seem to think it is. But Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have given some thought to that, Mrs. Capellini. We can place some seats in the open area back behind where you normally sit. We can place a seat there. And then as well, like Mayor, the mayor had indicated, moving some tables around and being able to place people in this area around the podium. So we think that we can get all the council in here. As far as public seating, a couple of the rows would have to be taken out and to maintain, to get that 6 feet front to back distance. And then as far as horizontal distance, just something similar to what the mayor just showed, that if somebody sits down, somebody from staff is going to have to place a 6-foot strip and say the next person, you know, has to be beyond that point. So I think it's manageable. If we have a large crowd, we're not going to have enough room, but we won't be able to maintain a 6-foot distance. So then the mayor's suggestion of finding something else in the community might be needed. So,
Mr. Aller, just for clarification, are we legally allowed to have more than 10 people in the room at this point?
One of the other things is that the home and group gatherings is they're still limiting those to 10 people or less. However, they've also have a caveat in there for businesses and restaurants where if you have a fire rating capacity, if you're at 50% of that capacity, we would easily be able to get underneath that 50% capacity.
I'm fine with it. I just don't want to be on the mayor's, yeah, on the governor's next press conference.
No, I agree 100%. That's kind of a caveat. They do. It's kind of confusing because they do say. You know, no groups less than 10 or less, but then there's that.
The state legislature has met.
I understand.
Yeah.
But
so, room sizes, yeah, room sizes and all of that kind of thing kind of comes
in. Sure.
So, if let's say 20 people decided to come, would we require that people wear masks or not, I mean, then we should be wearing masks if we're requiring people that are coming in to wear masks, probably.
Yeah, I think once you start getting larger groups of people, I think the masks will come into play because it's, you know, even if you're maintaining that 6-foot distance, it's not 6-foot distance or masks, it's social distance and masks. That's what the orders are. So I think if you start getting more people where you can't maintain the spacing, I think you start getting into things like that. The one thing that I would say is if when we are having meetings, if we could request that somebody contact Ms. Booker or somebody and let us know who's coming in and who's going to be doing the Zoom. Because if I know that we need, that we've got to have 6 people coming in, then I have to make sure that we have things set up. Mr. Silvernail with IT, you know, we've already talked about the temporary microphones that we might need to set up and things of that nature. So it will help us make sure that we've got things set up for what needs to be.
If I could suggest, and I can't speak for other members of council, we should probably set a date where the chamber needs to be capable of handling the entire council. And I don't know what that date needs to be. We've only got one meeting, and, you know, July meeting, which is kind of like two meetings.
There's a five-week break between the second meeting in June and the second meeting in July, and that might be an appropriate break to say everybody can come in.
Yeah, and if people still are uncomfortable and.
They don't have to.
Right, they don't have to, but I think that would, if that's a doable, timeframe, Mr. Aller, I think that would be, I think that would probably be appropriate.
That gives us something to plan for. It was, you know, being a council meeting, it was council's wishes and desires and, but if, you know, that meeting in July is the one to aim for, I think we can certainly do that.
So this is Doug Hamm. I'm comfortable with the, arrangement that we have presently. I'm going to take my lead from, Dr. Amy Acton and, Governor DeWine on this. He just extended their order to the 1st of July. And if he extends that order to, you know, into August, I don't feel compelled or wouldn't feel compelled to, change anything before that. You know, there are, I participated in meetings of well over 100 people, and they have Zoom meetings of well over 100 people that were, very orderly, well controlled by an administrator who was familiar with the available technology, and, were very efficient. So I think there is, I understand the interest to, all get together, but, I also believe that we have lots of options other than moving to a gymnasium or a meeting. So I would, encourage us to, continue to be, slow to abandon this, at least this technology that we're using now.
It is working pretty well since Mr. Silvernail did activate the smart board on the south wall of the council chamber, so we can all see you on that smart board. It helps. Mrs. Westfall.
Mr. Mayor and Mr. Frey, I do think the intent was simply to make it available, but still leave the option to council members to join as they see fit and feel comfortable. So I do support the concept of just being prepared, so that people can begin to see what it looks like and can begin to feel comfortable when they feel comfortable or when Dr. Acton indicates that it's time to return to normal, whatever that means.
We will continue to offer the Zoom format until further notice. No problem. All right, if we're ready, I'd like to move on to agenda item 6. Mrs. Capolitti, are we done with your added item, I think?
Yeah, thank you for your answer. I think we have some other discussion. Thank you for adding.
Thank you. So let's move on to agenda item 6, which is proposed ordinance 31-2020. This would amend section 125.02 of the Division of Police. Chief Snorr, I'd like you to give a description of the change and why you are asking for this change.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When I took over the job as police chief, one of the initiatives that I wanted to, one of my goals in the first year was to update our hiring practice. When I took the steps to be a Savannah police officer over 26 years ago, there were well over, I believe there were 130 some odd people on that civil service list for patrolmen. And our last civil service test yielded about 15 people on the test. So it's a dramatic decrease over the years. There have been different trends in hiring. Probably about 15 years ago, there was a trend, you know, and that was an economic issue. To try to provide the test for individuals who already have their state certification or their licensure, if you will. And that does make the system or the process a little bit more efficient. It speeds the process, but in turn, it does limit the number of people and perhaps even limit the opportunity for some people to take the test that they haven't been through the academy. And there's a trend nationally and certainly in the state of Ohio to try to open up that process to try to get, one, the numbers up, and two, to promote diversity in hiring for police officers. A lot of people don't really think about their career until they're recruited or they have some type of, a calling to do the job. And that happens to people at different stages of their life who might, they may not have completed a 2-year college course and the academy, which is, over 600, hours now. It's quite a commitment if you don't even have the prospect of a job. I met with the Civil Service Commission and the law director, and we spoke candidly about it, and there's a lot of support for a cadet position. So what would happen is people who are certified can still take the test, but people who are not certified as a police officer in the state of Ohio, but have some college, I believe it's 96 semester hours, they would still be eligible to take our test. And then we could look at the qualifications of the individual, and the main goal is to increase the applicant pool and to promote diversity. So that's really the change in the ordinance, adding the cadet position. A cadet would be a person who has taken the test, they've passed, they've been selected to be a police officer, they're not certified, and they would be, the cadet wage is a lower wage that they would earn when they're in the academy, as opposed to a full police officer's pay. So there is trying to make it more financially feasible to have such a position by the cadet position.
So Chief, the cadet position, we would basically pay them a salary.
Correct.
They would go to the academy for how long?
It really depends. If they can go full time, it's somewhere around 3 months, 3 to 4 months, depending on the curriculum, depending on the number of hours per day, that sort of thing. Then there's a part-time academy that goes 6 to 9 months. So it really depends on the curriculum that we're able to get them into. Now, there are a variety of academies in the area. Holmes Community College has one. Northwest State has an academy. OSP offers two academy sessions per year. Ohio State Highway Patrol. And there are other small academies maybe a little bit further away. We really like to look at Owens or Northwest because they're close. But it really just depends on the year. Sometimes the state offers a scholarship where the academy is free of cost as far as the training cost. So it really just depends on what school is open.
And if somebody wanted to go part-time and was on a 9-month plan, versus going full-time and do the 3 or 4 month plan, would the pay for the cadet vary?
No, because we would accelerate the training. We would do once someone's completed the academy, they have about 20 weeks of on-the-job training. We did a lot of the on-the-job training. You don't have to be a certified police officer. Learning about domestic violence policy or pursuit policy, those are all classroom things we provide here. So they could do that during the day and then go to the session in the evening. So it actually would help us do both at once. So the part-time I actually would always prefer just because we could have them here for our policy and procedure training, our defensive tactics training, all the technical things that we need to cover before they even have the industry. And let them help with our training as well, because the training officers wouldn't necessarily be pulled away from the front side of the pool on some.
And what's the methodology if there is one? I mean, obviously this is new, so maybe there is one, but what's the methodology to determine if you've got somebody that's already gone through the academy, that's certified, and say, I've got this individual and I've got somebody that wants to go part-time, but maybe finished with their junior year in college, but decides that they don't want to complete it for whatever reason, or they left it 5 years ago, or whatever it was. How do you determine person A and person B?
As far as selecting a candidate?
Yeah, how do you make
well, the in call? The last couple of tests, we've run out of suitable candidates. Now, the Sylvania Police Division is, one of the more selective agencies as far as we run a very comprehensive background and selection process, similar to what the Highway Patrol and the FBI would do. Quality candidates is very important to us, and there's a system of negative points that people earn for a variety of background issues. And there are times, right now is a perfect example, we don't have any candidates that we can bring forward. left on that list for a couple of years. We did hire some folks off, some officers off that list that we agreed. We're to the point where we don't have any suitable candidates. So we run into that. Or, you know, if there were a person who we did, where we got a candidate, so we're about, you know, just depending on the situation, if we had a person who wasn't certified and they were, had a good background and met the qualifications for the job, perhaps a lot of it has to do with we do testing, we do domain testing, which is, there's a psychological test that's built into that and some basic organizational skills. Those are factors we use as well. There might be a person who's just very bright, very, people oriented, has great communication skills. They may outshine, you know, someone who's certified. The emphasis would always be someone who is experienced, proven in the field. You know, that's great, but we are competing with other communities like Perrysburg, Maumee, Oregon. One of the last officers we hired, we had to hurry up and get our process going so that we could hire them before Maumee or Perrysburg, because they had interviewed with all three agencies in the same week. So it is very competitive to find a quality officer that does the job the way we want it done, the way our community expects. And that's the focus. High quality applicants is very important to me as a chief, and I think to our community.
Sure, absolutely. And are there other communities that take this approach now?
Well, just to give you an example, Oregon Police Department never really went, they didn't go to a format like us where we had to have the academy. They just stuck with, you know, keeping it open to a variety of individuals. Bowling Green Police Department has kept, you know, a similar hiring format at OBGSU as well. Those are the only ones I know off the top of my head. I know Maumee is considering them. The chiefs meet every month there, and the chiefs will talk about these things. It is, again, it's the competitiveness to try to find the applicant system. And to be quite frank, the interest in law enforcement, people working in law enforcement, has dwindled. And I'm sure, given the current events, it's going to be even harder to find people that want to see
so
law.
So Oregon, Bowling Green have this similar structure.
Right.
If we get 15 people taking the test, do they get 50?
Their numbers are dramatically higher.
Okay.
It could be 10 to 20, 30% higher. It just depends on the year, depends on recruiting. We have put a lot more emphasis on recruiting, going out and talking to kids in universities, going to job fairs, actually going on campus, giving presentations in the criminal justice programs. We're trying to partner with the universities to, you know, they're offering a product, their criminal justice curriculum, where we're trying to align individuals with the jobs. And, you know, another initiative that I want to really push and try to get the word out is we haven't hired a new officer who from Sylvania in over 10 years. So most of the officers we hire are from out of the area, who are already certified. I'm trying to get more interest in either students graduating from Lord or from Northview or Southview as they reach the age of 21, and having the cadet option might be the right fit for somebody. Perhaps they didn't think about it when they were 19, but now they're 21 or 22, and they've got some college, but it's not maybe not. They haven't taken the police academy.
Right.
So it's about creating more opportunity and more for the individuals and more opportunity for the city to recruit high quality officers.
Sure. Thank you.
Well, Mr. President, he mentioned the city of Oregon and the city of Bowling Green. He's obviously talked to the chiefs and I've talked to the administration there. And while both of them have the ability to, Oregon, they think it's been 10 to 15 years since they've actually hired one without the Ohio certification. And when I talked to Bowling Green, they couldn't remember the last time they had that. So even though you have the ability, it doesn't mean you have to.
Right, sure.
It just means you have the ability.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
In my experience, it seems like BGSU was the one, the agency that was hiring most of them. A lot of the, you know, more so to hire, more apt to hire officers who aren't through the academy. Then again, they're seeing some of the best and brightest coming through there. They're working as student workers, where they're getting a really good look. And universities aren't as popular for a certified officer. They sometimes don't pay as much, and there might not be as much activity. So typically, you know, Sylvania is one of the most sought after places to work in this county, along with Oregon and Maumee. You know, they're kind of some of the more desirable communities to work in.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, if I could just make
Mrs. Westfall.
Chief Schnorr, it certainly is concerning to hear that you can't find candidates, so I am grateful for your leadership in launching this effort and looking at this cadet option. Just so I understand, the cadet option would be they'd have some lesser responsibilities until they've completed the academy, and then they would be certified and be a full, full-fledged police officer.
Correct. During that cadet time, they would basically be earning their state license through the academy. And if they were part-time in the academy, then they would be doing training here. They would be getting a portion of the 20 weeks that they have to be on the job anyway. Many of those hours are classroom or online instruction or technical, like self-defense or firearms, handcuffing. Those are hours that they have to do. Even if we hire a certified officer, they have to do through our curriculum. They have to be trained our way. We need to make sure that they understand properly, they're making arrest, customer service, all the things that are important to us.
Great.
So it's very doable either way. I would probably prefer the part-time option for the academy, so we can knock out a lot of training over here. But the intent again is just to try to increase the opportunity for the city and for individuals.
Thank you.
Another thing I would like to point out to council, it's not in this code that you have before you, but another part of our code had a reimbursement stipulation where we're putting this individual through the academy. And I believe is that they leave within 24?
1 year.
Just 1 year? Okay. If they were to leave, well, they have 1 year, they would take the academy.
Okay.
But if they leave within 2 years, then they would have to reimburse the city for these costs.
Now, what happens if they quit midstream? Let's say they go part-time, we're starting to pay them. They're 3 months into a nine-month program and say, I'm going to the Bahamas.
They would have to reimburse.
They still reimburse.
Yes.
Okay.
So we have some safety nets in there to try to live in.
I figured you had. I just figured also be something else.
Just as a side note, it's probably a minor thing in the language here, but it is kind of a step in the right direction for us. Starting with language here. Yes, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. About 7 rows down there, there reads 26 police officers, and for many, many years, maybe even since the formation of the city, officers in Savannah were called patrolmen. And that issue was brought up to us. We're all used to it. We've been setting our policy procedure of patrolling agencies. Many of us consider a unisex term or a term representing male or female. And our consultant, the supplemental policy and procedure, brought that up as an issue that they thought they were really surprised we were still using that term. And we did poll our officers, and it was about 50-50. There was a lot of tradition among some of the female staff at that time, but we thought it was best to take this opportunity to update that and call all of our officers and not patrolmen. So just a side note, it's changing this legislation.
There's no further questions for the chief. We do have legislation in front of us, Ordinance 31-2020. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce Ordinance Number 31-2020. All members of council having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only. Amending Section 125.02, Division of Police, amending Section 139.03(e)(3), Definition and Adoption of the Compensation Plan for the Codified Ordinances of Sylvania 1979, as amended, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's moved and seconded that Ordinance Number 31-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of Ordinance Number 31-2020.
It is moved and seconded for final passage of Ordinance 31-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and Ordinance 31-2020 is approved. Moving on to Agenda Item 7. Mr. Aller has included in your council packets a report about the design build services for the bio retention and stream restoration in Haroon Park along the river trail. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This project will basically change out in the parking lot behind the roof building. I'll call it circular area, mostly grass and trees in there. What we'll do is take the middle portion of that area out, make that a rain garden. Basically, rain garden is the more common term for bioretention stuff. We'll collect the runoff from the parking area back there. It'll run through the bioretention cell, receive some treatment, remove some of the sediment that is coming off of that parking lot, and then ultimately, at some point, then discharge them to the nearby 10 Mile Creek. As part of the project, there'll also be some rock ripples placed into the stream. Those are to increase habitat ability within the stream, especially along the banks, and then also some minor stream restoration for a stretch of the stream. So I've had conversations with the building owner, who's been in touch with the with Root company on the work that's being done, and was agreeing to move forward with this project. The consultant, we went through a series of initially requested qualifications, reduced that that list down to three firms, two firms, and then finally made a selection from those two firms who had included their costs for to complete the project and what their project concepts would be. We are recommending that we go with Civil Environmental Consultants right here in Toledo, Ohio, who is partnered with HEPACO from Charlotte, North Carolina, and their total project costs are at $229,200. This is a project where we have 90% of the funding from Ohio EPA. So of that $229,000, the city's only responsible for about almost $22,920. So I would recommend, we haven't done any work with Civil Environmental Consultants, but I am familiar with the firm. I've been on several TINA CAR committees with some of their employees.
Mr. Aller, I took the opportunity last week during one of the big rainstorms to look at the small retention pond, and perhaps it's a rain garden at the parking lot on the at the west end of Haroon Park, the St. Joseph parking lot. The water building up in there pretty quick, but it does seem to be holding up. I was concerned that mulch or all the vegetation would wash away. That seems to, after a couple of years, seems to be in pretty good shape. Is it a similar installation that you're proposing?
Yeah, it'll be a similar installation. The first 2 years of these bioretention cells, they look a little ragged. Once the plants have been able to get established and firmed up, and we get mulch moved where it needs to be, then they hold up much better. But the first couple of years, they do look a little ragged. I don't hide that fact. But once we get through that stage, then they really look really something. And it's probably a huge benefit to the sediment from that parking lot.
I also walked the original section of the river trail today. And took a look at the SOMO construction going on, and was very impressed with the water quality coming across in 10 Mile Creek today. It's quite clear there are fish in the creek, and you say that we're going to put more environmental stuff into the creek to even improve it better. You know,
the rock ripples are basically V-shaped veins that direct the water. Increase the velocity of the water in the flow and increase it on the bank. That enables the habitat to be able to get some of the food and nutrients and that that are typically in soils and that kind of stuff off of the banks. And should this intended to improve the habitat that you see in the creek?
The creek was beautiful today. There are some natural retention ponds in the floodplain that are holding water right now. They're beginning to smell a little bit. But they're natural retention areas. I assume that they'll soak out as the water table goes down. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Aller?
I got a few. How long would this take?
It's actually very fast construction-wise. If you were looking, I think the construction schedule was less than 3 months. It's about two and a half months. The timing, could we have a higher EPA money? A lot of it is getting the plant prepared, getting them approved, modifying, because we are, kind of coming into the area of roots, and the building owner, we want to make sure that we're going to work with them to make sure that they're happy to go.
My second question.
Yeah.
And the last question I have is something near and dear to my heart, which is by putting these modifications into the creek itself, so it's up further up the creek, any impact on flooding?
No.
That's what I think you were saying, I was hoping you would.
No, it wouldn't.
Thank you.
Water got pretty high a couple of weeks ago.
It did.
That's as high as I've seen it in about 2 years. And
I didn't ask that question, and something happened, my neighbors would shoot me.
Yeah. These were the V-shaped veins were very low, they'll set even below the existing waters.
There had been concerns that the township and the county cleaning out 10 Mile Creek to the west of town would increase flooding, and that I haven't seen that yet. It seems to be okay. But that was quite a big project out there, lowering that down and having it run better. And it created more floodplain area at the same time. All right. Other questions for Mr. Aller? This particular project goes across three different committees. It could be buildings and grounds because it's a city parking lot. It could go with parks and forestry because it's for the river trail, but I think it's actually a utility issue. It's a drainage issue. Mr. McCann.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 34-2020. All members of council having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only, authorizing the mayor and director of finance to accept the proposal of civil and environmental consultancy for the design build services for the Bloom Park River Trail Bioretention and Stream Restoration Project, appropriating funds therein in an amount not to exceed $229,200 and declaring an emergency, waiving the second and third reading and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's moved and seconded that ordinance number 34-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 34-2020 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It's moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 34-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 34-2020 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 8. This is the Maplewood Avenue reconstruction project. Mr. Aller has a report to you. This is for geotechnical and environmental engineering services. First off, Mr. Aller, this project scheduled for 2021 or 2022?
2021.
So it does not affect the current road closure. It'll be a future road closure. Okay. All right, Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At our last meeting, council approved the engineering services contract with CT Consultants. And obviously, as part of their work, they are interested in what actually lies below the surface. And so this work is with TTL Associates of Toledo, Ohio. They do much of our geotechnical work on our projects. They will do core samples, that will determine what the soil is below the concrete subbase on Maplewood Avenue. And then we also have them, had them provide a proposal for environmental engineering, should it be needed. Some of our existing staff has been with the city long enough that remembers when there was some work done in that area. Maplewood Marketplace used to be an auto shop. Remember some core soils in that area.
There was also an oil tank discovered out under Maplewood Avenue when we, when the city purchased the property.
Yep, that was mentioned, actually. So we have them on board. Should we get into anything like that, that way we can plan appropriately and not be surprised during construction if something pops up on us. So we would recommend approval, entering into a contract with TTL Associates in the amount of $5,140 for geotechnical work and $8,400 for environmental engineering work. And I would remind council that this is an OPWC project, and so we are ultimately will be reimbursed approximately 49% for this work once everything comes through.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Aller? If not, we have ordinance number 35-2020. Mr. Fry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 35-2020. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Accepting the proposal of TTL Associates Incorporated to provide geotechnical and environmental services for the Maplewood Avenue reconstruction project, appropriating funds therefore in the amount of $13,540, waiving the second and third readings, and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 35-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of ordinance number 35-2020 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 35-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 35-2020 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 9, you have in your council packets ordinance 36-2020, and this has to be with determination to proceed with the improvements. It's an extension of a sanitary sewer line on Acres Road. Mr. Aller, you should give us an update on this. I believe this is a short extension. It's a requested extension for two properties.
Yes, this was requested by both property owners. The project is being assessed. Each property owner is paying just over $7,600, I believe. And because of that assessment, this ordinance is a required part of the process. Typically, we don't need to do these because we don't have the assessments in place, but the legal people need to make sure that so you just ask for approval. Our crews are getting ready. This work will be done in June. Within the next couple of weeks, they'll be starting on it. It'll take less than a week. So you just ask for approval.
All right. Questions for Mr. Aller concerning this sanitary sewer extension? Hearing none, we have ordinance 36-2020. Mr. McCann.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 36-2020. All members of council have received copies of the ordinance by title only. Determining to proceed with the improvement of the city of Sylvania, Lucas County, Ohio Municipal Street Acres Road between Sugar Hill Court and Greenhaven Road by installing 8-inch sanitary sewer lines and other related appurtenances. And declaring an emergency, waiting the second and third reading.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 36-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 36-2020 as an emergency measure.
Second.
It is moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 36-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 36-2020 is approved. Moving to the second page of our agenda, we're up to agenda item 10. This is ordinance 37-2020. It has to do with extending or delaying our fireworks contract with Sam Belli. Mr. Fry.
This is a sad one, but nonetheless, I'll, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 37-2020. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Authorizing an agreement with Sam Belli Fireworks Manufacturing Company for the Independence Day celebrations on July 3rd, 2021, July 3rd, 2022, and July 3rd, 2023 at Centennial Terrace and Quarry. Authorizing the mayor and director of finance to sign an agreement for the fireworks display, which will cost $35,000, ratifying the cancellation of the Independence Day celebration that was scheduled for July 3rd, 2020, authorizing a 50% payment for each year's fireworks display due in February of each calendar year, which will be shared by the City of Sylvania, by the City, Sylvania Township, Coca-Cola Corporation, Sylvania Area Joint Recreation District, and area businesses, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
Before we move to the vote, I'm not sure if council knows the process you went through and who you met with and to make this difficult decision. Perhaps a briefing on that would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. As I think I mentioned in an email, we had a series of meetings between Mr. Turner from the township, Mr. Sanford from the city, and myself, and Mike McMahon with Sage Art, and it was a series of Zoom conference calls over the last 2 months discussing how we were going to do this, whether we were going to do this, if we were going to do it, how we would mechanically and logistically pull this off. As things continue to progress with COVID, it just looked less and less likely. Clearly, Centennial Terrace wasn't doable because of social distancing requirements associated with restrooms. We thought about potentially looking at Pacer Park, but in the end, I know that the Chief Ram and Chief Storm, Chief from Sylvania Township also met, and they had concerns about incremental people coming up on the 3rd because of other communities canceling their fireworks, and they thought that would create too much of a safety issue with everything else going on. So with that, we reluctantly said we had to step back for this year, figure out some sort of other way to celebrate the founding of our nation many years ago, hundreds of years ago, but this year we just can't do it. So we'd love to personally struggle with this because I enjoy the fireworks, but it just didn't come together this year. So we're going to push it back for a year and celebrate next year.
We appreciate your work on this. Any questions for Mr. Fry before we move on to the vote? The administration is considering different options. As you know, we did hold a brief Memorial Day ceremony on the Main Street Bridge where the veterans put the wreath into the river. That was part of every Memorial Day, but that's all we did this Memorial Day. I'm not sure what our actual recognition will be, but we are accepting ideas and we're working with other organizations to try and come up with the proper approach. And I welcome your suggestions. With that, it's already been moved and seconded that ordinance number 37-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of ordinance number 37-2020 as an emergency measure.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 37-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 37-2020 is approved. Thank you for your efforts, Mr. Fry. We do appreciate it. Moving on to agenda item 11, you have ordinance number 38-2020 in your council packets. This is ordered legislation to move ahead with task three of the downtown Sylvania master plan and market analysis. Mr. Sanford.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple of comments. If you remember when we first got into this project and there was a question if we could separate it into, she laid it out, Michelle Johnson, we're working with consultant, she laid it out as three tasks with the idea that we did the first two tasks because it split the total amount pretty much in half. And if we liked what we saw, what she did in the first half, we would continue to do the second half. The whole project is what you need to really move forward to get recommendations and ideas and recommendations for our downtown. The idea was splitting it, though, if we did not know, like where it was going, we could stop and cut our losses and move on. I think we had a pretty good meeting following up with her, answered our questions, she updated the plan. So this is the next step, and to get this done, that's why we have the ordinance today. She is going to be the, and you'll all get notice of this, but I'll bring it up now, the CIC board meeting on June the 10th. It'll be a Zoom meeting at noon. We'll make sure y'all get the information. She is the guest speaker. And I also plan to invite the PSA members to that Zoom meeting also so you can hear what she's been doing, what she's done so far, and what she plans to do the second part of this and what it means for the city at the end of that.
Thank you.
So, you know, I just have one quick comment that I'd like to make if this passes this evening. One of the things that task two included was the real estate developer interviews, which in our conversation with her, she indicated that there had been a revision to this and she hadn't actually moved that properly to task three. And I would just like to make sure that that is a part of her task three responsibilities and that she completes those interviews as she's outlined in the proposal.
I will follow up with that.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Sanford? Hearing none, we do have Gordon. Mr. Hanum.
I think I hear the councilman's comments on the downtown plan back on April 20th. And I will admit I'm not very enthusiastic about going forward with this. I think the market analysis that she's provided, or that the report provided, is helpful, beneficial. We've done these before. We take the recommendation.
Appreciate your comments, Mr. Hanum. We've been around long enough to see studies come and go, but they do elicit thought. They do bring some ideas. We don't necessarily follow them, certainly none of them to the letter, but they are helpful for people to voice ideas and perhaps find the appropriate way forward. So thank you for that support, but also for the comments. Other members of council? All right, to authorize this, we do have ordinance number 38-2020. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce ordinance number 38-2020. All members of council having received copies in advance, I will read by title only. Authorizing the mayor and director of finance to accept the proposal of Environmental Design Group to perform task 3 of the Sylvania Downtown Master Plan and Market Analysis, appropriating funds therefore in an amount not to exceed $23,875, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's moved and seconded that ordinance number 38-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move final passage of ordinance number 38-2020.
Second.
It's moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 38-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 38-2020 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 12, which is committee reports. 12A is a report of the committee of the whole held May 20th, 2020. Mrs. Westfall.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we did have a committee of the whole meeting on May 20th, 2020. The subject was temporary street closures. Present were myself, Mary Westfall, Katie Capellini, Mark Fry, Doug Hayne, and Brian McCann, Lindsay Stow, Patrick Richardson, and others who were joining us. Leslie Brining, Mayor Stow, Kevin Aller, Sharon Booker, Chuck Silvernail, Danny Fuller, Brian Keiser, Katie Fields, Melon Fott, Colleen Barnhart, and Rachel Navarre. The meeting began at 4:30. All members of council had received some information in advance from Mr. Sanford. Mr. Sanford gave an overview indicating that the three options that have been considered and discussed with various members of the community, including some downtown friends, that the recommendation coming forward was for option one, which included closing Maplewood from Main Street to Becker Place inside the five. Mr. Fry indicated support, but indicated that if it continued that closing in that area through Labor Day, he would want to be sure that we took a moment to think about the back to school concerns. After some discussion, there was support identified for the option one that was presented. Other points of consideration included suggesting that people bring their own folding chairs, ensuring that the greatest number of tables possible be put in the area. Danny Fuller indicated that she does have some high top tables she would be willing to contribute if there's any interest. Katie Fields indicated that while food could not be sold at the tables in the street, inside the five would be willing to wipe them down as needed. Katie Fields also noted that that she would need to be able to get her delivery trucks in and out, and administration indicated they would work with her to ensure that could happen. Katie Fields also pointed out that last March there was legislation amended that allows the Dora, Ohio liquor permit to be made available on any city property, which would expand additional opportunities for Dora, and that seems something significant. Administration will confirm that this is accurate, and if so, make a recommendation regarding an possible expansion of Dora. Bill Sanford did offer to work with appropriate members of the community and administration to make recommendations regarding some of these additional issues, such as expanding the Dora, connecting with Heritage Sylvania, washing stations and sanitizer availability, street signage, and ensuring that other community restaurants know that they can use their parking lots for overflow and other issues as they surface. Mr. Richardson made a motion that legislation be prepared to close Maplewood from Main Street to Becker Place to allow for an expanded Dora area to include tables, seating for outdoor public use until such time as further action is taken to limit this option. Mrs. Capellini seconded and the motion did pass. The meeting adjourned at 5:15. Then I just would want to share with council members that upon further discussion with administration, it was indicated that legislation really is not required for this. The mayor has the authority to advance this action, and since we did advance this action, we did not feel it was necessary to bring formal legislation, although certainly we will want to stay on top of the decision about when to limit this option and not lose sight of that going forward. In addition to that, Mr. Mayor, I know that you did put a spot in there for Ms. Dow to talk about her conversation with Heritage Sylvania, and I don't know if Bill has any further follow-up from some of the items that he was addressing. I don't think there's anything critical, but...
We appreciate your report. One of the items was for the law director to determine whether or not we could expand into the historic village. Mrs. Brining?
Thank you, Mayor. As Doug indicated at the meeting, I had an opportunity to look at the statute that governs the Bora, and we can amend it to include any city-owned property. The process of doing that is the same as when we establish this. We have to have a public hearing, do the notification and application. It just wanted to know that that's the same process we have to follow.
All right. So it would take a couple of months. Then the question becomes what Ms. Dow can report to us on. Is the historic village interested in that?
Thank you. So this afternoon, the executive committee of Heritage Sylvania met to discuss the plan of the word expansion to the historic village. The meeting included Andy Erskine, Tom Blake, Danny Hudson, and myself. At that meeting, we discussed how Heritage Sylvania had already been discussing the potential ideas to become a stronger part of downtown Sylvania's experience by getting involved during the art walks or planning additional events. But due to current health safety concerns, the timelines for those opportunities are unknown. But all of the attendees at the meeting expressed excitement and support for the village green, we called it, to be included in DORA, given that a few concerns are considered and addressed. Now I'll talk about those in just a moment. The executive committee also recommended potentially considering including the Sister City Garden in the DORA expansion. It would beautifully maintain space within flowers, the pergola, and the gazebo. And in the meantime, since it might take some time for a change to be made in effect with DORA, Heritage Sylvania wants them to know that they welcome the public to enjoy the village green for additional outdoor public seating and recreation space. And there's already a couple of picnic tables there, and they're open to more table seats or bring their own chairs as available. As I mentioned a moment ago, there's four concerns that were brought up at the meeting, and we've come up with some potential solutions, but perhaps those would be more appropriately discussed in a committee, or I would be happy to share them now. I'm thinking guidance on what would be appropriate to share right now.
I think it would be good to hear briefly what their concerns are, maybe, and that they are solvable. I know I have a concern. And it's not a concern this year because they are having no summer day camps there this year, but I'd be concerned about having the DORA during the daytime when there's a student group out on the village green. So that might be one of the four you have. Why don't you move ahead with your four?
Well, yes, that is one of the four. Accessibility. As you mentioned, there currently isn't any student programming, but the committee is optimistic that educational programming will be back in the spring, and we are setting ourselves up to be able to do that. So the village is also occasionally rented out for private events, and that helps provide some necessary funding to help reduce our ask from the city. So our question, this might be a legal question, is whether or not the village green could be closed from the public at select times, either by having some sort of sign or something to have at the entrance to prevent from daytime overlapping use between either school children and someone drinking there, or perhaps during a private event. So we don't have the answer to that, but we're hoping that there might be some whether they'll get some guidance on whether or not that is a possibility to close them off. Another one of the concerns is security, given there was a previous vandalism incident there, and alcohol can potentially fuel other incidences. The executive committee expressed a desire for increased security. The thought was that police are already likely to be passing by the Maplewood pedestrian zone a little more frequently, that perhaps they could just swing by the village on those same rounds. And in the future, we might also have to consider limiting access to areas contained and behind the building. So as of right now, we don't feel that that would be necessary, unless it's proven necessary. Another issue was the public restroom safety. Cleaning is currently the responsibility of Heritage Sylvania, and occurs following each school program, which obviously is not happening right now. If open to the public for regular use, current safety guidelines would require deep cleaning of the restroom daily, which would be a struggle for Heritage Sylvania to maintain without assistance. But for the attorneys, the restroom's closed. Most public restrooms are currently closed anyway due to health concerns, including open and park. And then the final concern is trash. Dora cups and trash have already been finding their way to the village. If Dora's expanded into the village, we're wondering if a city trash receptacle, perhaps a Dora cup bin, to be installed near the entrance to the village to help control their issues. So the four issues were security, public restroom safety, trash.
All right. Those are valid concerns that are perhaps should be answered, at least in part by the administration, perhaps in committee. It is a long time process to do this. What would be the steps to propose legislation to change the district and then schedule a public hearing? Is that?
We have to draft legislation, which includes revising the legal description. Then we send out, schedule the public hearing, and send out notices.
Do you want to refer this to committee?
I think it has to be, don't you?
I do. Sorry.
Do you think it can go to buildings and grounds, though?
Yes, it could.
Yeah.
I don't know, now that we can, it's right here, and we're going to be having problems with the community.
Mr. Mayor, this is
Mr. Hanum.
I know we moved this before. We had a subcommittee meet and proposed the boundaries of Dora and there's some options to council. That might be appropriate here again, and maybe would be an appropriate committee for that.
Well, another possibility is refer it to building and grounds, since it's city property and Ms. Dow's already abreast of the situation. Mrs. Westfall just said that might be a possibility of what as well, if that's acceptable to council. Lindsay, how do you feel about that?
That seems appropriate.
Okay. The chief will need to attend that.
Want to consider expanding Dora on any non-city property. I'm sorry, no, it has to be city property. So no matter what, however we expand it, would be a problem.
There is another issue that Mr. Fry would like to ask right now, which might change the boundaries as well. Mr. Fry.
Well, given the fact that my understanding from what Mrs. Bryant said, any city-owned property would be eligible. Is that correct?
That's correct.
If we're going to go through this process, and I know there's a number of acreage limitation on what we can have in the door, correct? We don't have any issue with that. So the question I had was, the city also owns the parking lot out behind this building, and while that may not be something that we want to include in the Dora, legally could we include a parking lot in the Dora? So, for instance, if we decided to close the parking lot and have some sort of a gathering, that could be part of the Dora at that point.
it could, you can also get feedback from it.
Right, I know that. But this would just be an ongoing option so that you don't have to go through that process.
I think Chief Snore is going to need to be a part of this when the idea of the Village Green and Historic Village came up and Ms. Dow asked about patrolling that. Right now, a patrol car can just roll down Main Street and see everything. They're going to have to turn off of Main Street and go back to see the Village Green. Same would be true if it's going to be in the parking lot here at the administration building. So I want the chief to have a chance to think about that and be a part of any committee meeting as well. Mr. Sanford, comments?
Yes, Mayor, I just have a couple of follow-up because I've been having some discussions with some of the DSA people. Most of all, Brenda Barton, who is the head of the group. But first, I want to publicly thank Kevin and public service, because if you think about it, we had that meeting on Wednesday, and by Friday noon, the road was closed, the picnic tables were moved in, and very positively received a lot of action on social media. It's being used. It's achieved, I think, what we wanted to do. The two restaurants inside the 5 and J&G that are closest to it, they're both very pleased with how this all works so far. And I think over the weekend I noticed that J&G even added a couple of picnic tables on the side of their building. Back up what the chief has said, I had one call came to the mayor's office about the street being closed. And I think it was more, you know, there was not any time to get any kind of notice out to the neighborhood or tell people what was going on. And this guy's comment was more, he was used to festivals and different things, and it was closed on Friday, and Monday they just expected it to be open. And after I talked with him, he seemed to be a lot better. So it is an adjustment. The closing date, and Mr. Fry brought this up before, we will have to end before school starts sometime in August, so that this bus route would be open down the neighborhood. So I think that would be the end time. On Friday, I met with Ray and some of the other members from the DSA, talked about is there a way to add more tables, should there be some signage that we could add to the area so people really know what it's for. There's some confusion, you know, and I think we talked staff-wise, there's probably some things we can do. Talked about the high top tables didn't really work. The idea with the picnic tables, the direction is to treat it like a restaurant where they want people to come in and sit down. They don't want people walking around. So it is really, the more places you have to sit, the better. The delivery has worked fine inside the box. They are not a problem. You know, the delivery people are stopping on either Main Street or across the street on Maplewood, and they bring it across and go in. So some of that has worked out pretty well. Sanitation inside the 5 is cleaning the tables the beginning and the end of the day. That seems to work out. We talked about need of a porta john, and again, inside the 5 said they didn't think that was necessary, that we could use the restrooms there at their place. So that was we'll continue to talk and just keep this moving forward, but so far I think it's been positively received.
Now, I would just like to echo your words of thanks to Mr. Aller for his quick response and his team's quick response, but also to thank you, Bill, for your efforts, because you certainly stepped up in many ways to make sure this went forward and built the relationships with the community businesses to make sure it went forward. So I think this was a huge win all the way around with the work from administration, the downtown businesses, and City Council. A special thanks to Lindsay Stow, who brought the idea forward and allowed us to really begin to think outside of the box. It was really quite a great effort from many.
Bill, thank you. I had a quick question. I'll echo everything that's said. I enjoyed it myself. It's great. I've had countless friends and neighbors tell me how great it is. I think it's awesome. The question I have is, who is responsible for emptying the garbage cans in there?
It's a great question. The downtown guys, when they empty the garbage, they empty them. I know they were just over there like on Friday, I think, because they looked kind of full. The first weekend, inside the 5, kept an eye on them. and whatever. So I think they'll continue to do that, because we don't have people working, or they don't have pickups on.
Yeah.
So that's something we need to talk about.
I mean, both on Saturday and Sunday, every bin was overflowing. People were like going inside the fire to throw things away. So, you know, we knew there'd be probably some road bumps like this, but this is something that I think we should keep an eye on.
I think, because the weekend being the peak time, we just gotta reach out to the restaurants and see what they can do, and I think the only questions they might have, what to do with the garbage, where to put it, we can probably put something together, similar like when we have festivals downtown, and they pile it up someplace that gets picked up on the run on Monday or whatever.
Okay.
That's a great problem to have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they are being used, there's just no doubt.
All right, Mrs. Westfall, what would you like, action would you like to take?
I think we want to make a referral to the Buildings and Grounds Committee for the review of this and a recommendation back and to work with administration. So that's a motion. How's that?
It's been moved and seconded to refer the issue of extending the Dora into the historic village to the Building and Grounds Committee. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Lindsay, would you like to try to schedule a meeting at this time? Mr. Hanem.
I know the fly asked about the parking lot. I think we ought to just make this a, I'm assuming this thing will look at extending the Dora highway, not just to the social building.
I'm sure that that's the case, yes.
Okay, all right, I just wanted to.
All right, sometimes it's easiest to try and schedule your meetings during a council. While we're all here, we can look at our calendars. I know it's taking you by surprise, but want to try and schedule a meeting of your Building and Grounds Committee.
All right.
Who's on Building and Grounds?
So we have me, Mrs. Kelly, Mr. Eason, and Mr. Fry, who are on that committee. I have a flexible schedule. I have a feeling from our past trying to make schedules that the other three would have more stringent schedules. Perhaps something early next week. Like maybe on Monday or Tuesday, is that an available time or available day at some point?
Either works for me. Tuesday morning would be tough, but if we were talking like afternoon or something, that would be fine. But Monday morning open also, so.
Monday would be much better for me. Tuesday's pretty much dead for me.
So Monday morning is best for me. I'm wondering, do we need to like a map to have this meeting, like to be able to look at, or if we don't? I don't know.
You need to know what space is available, yeah. Lindsay will think of that.
Mrs. Brining is saying that she has that maps available. I think it's important to have Mrs. Brining at the meeting, Mr. Sanford, and the chief, I believe, yes. Are you guys available on Monday?
At 9?
This would be Monday, June the 8th at 9 a.m., probably right here in council chambers.
That works for me.
That works.
9 o'clock on Monday?
Yep.
Okay. In council chambers.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
We will have the clerk post that meeting for the Building and Grounds Committee to discuss the Dora expansion. All right, thank you. Mrs. Westfall, are we ready to move on to 12B?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, 12B, a report of the Employee and Community Relations Committee meeting held on May 21st. 2020. Mr. Richardson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Our committee met to discuss the 2021 city calendar and the proposals we had received for the design and prints of that. The committee did decide to accept the proposal of Arrow Print and Copy to do the physical printing of the calendars. They came in as the lowest bid, and we also all know them and know they do good work, and we felt confident with that. And then we are also going to use the team from Flanders and Fuller to do the design work on it, the artistic eye, so to speak, of this. So we talked with that team in this meeting and discussed their vision for it, and we're going to have another meeting here soon once they have a finalized idea. You know, a lot of things got changed. They wanted to photograph events that were happening this spring and summer, and obviously that didn't happen. So it was also brought up, and this is maybe for future consideration, the possibility of turning this into a three-year bid of sorts, because as they were explaining, to get this in May, and then maybe it's not awarded until June, and half the year is gone, and if they're trying to take photos of things, you know, throughout the year, to put in the calendar, it would be good to know earlier. So we all agreed that that was a good point, we would take a look at that, but no decision was made on that. But we did make a decision to have this ordinance drawn up for accepting the proposal. If there's no questions, I can go ahead with that now.
I do have a question or a clarification. I think it's necessary. You've separated the bid for printing versus the design of the calendar, but you did have a lower bid from Arrow to design the calendar. I think clarification is necessary when you're not taking the low bid for something. We are in a financial situation, and I think it's appropriate to put on the record why you're choosing to spend 3.5 times more for the design of the calendar than the low bid.
Sure. The committee felt that their proposal based on what they were proposing to do artistically and design-wise was more in line with what we wanted. And that part of the way to overcome that was that we had them agree to use Arrow, because the person that they were going to use, the third-party printer, was much more expensive. So their original bid is coming down because Arrow will do it cheaper for them what it was originally bid at, and therefore we kind of figured that could be the best of both worlds.
All right. I understand. You consider that it's going to be a better design process,
yes,
and that's what you're paying for.
Yes.
All right.
I did have one clarification. Because I didn't sit in the second meeting, but the first meeting we had, there was some comment by Mr. Sanford about the number of calendars that were going to be printed up. We're going to increase it. For some reason, that 7,000 looked low. My brain tells me it's 8,500.
9,000. What we're going to print this year. It was it's tied to the census and some of the apartment buildings or places that were not included in getting. But it was 8,000 something that we're going to mail.
It does say 7,000 in the ordinance.
And the original proposal was for 7,000. Right. Up the number after the tax.
Okay, and that's incorporated.
The proposals were based on 7,000.
Right.
So this price isn't reflective of the new one.
But the money is going to be the same for the nine?
No, it'll be more for the...
It'll be more.
The printing will be...
It doesn't matter to me. If we need 9,000 calendars, I just want to make sure that we're proving this, that the $9,358 is enough to print 9,000 calendars, if that's what we need.
Or we'll be back in with a change order. Yeah, or we'll be back in with...
It doesn't matter to me. From that perspective,
yeah, that the confusion is because when we bid it, we needed 7,000 before we made the decision. We found out we needed 9,000, so we will. That was the plan.
So let's get a new bid.
So should we pass this and wait for a change order, or
should we just wait?
Yeah, just wait.
Why don't we wait?
I think we will wait.
We'll quit on that.
All right.
That's
but I think that we can run it. Yeah.
Right.
2 weeks would feel like a long time for them to show right now.
Do we have time to wait?
Yeah, I'm not.
If we wait 2 weeks, I don't know.
I think if they know they can start, if they know that's what we're going to. It's more the design part that I think they already have.
And yeah, I've been talking to them. I think that we can wait 2 weeks.
But the design component won't cost any more. The printing is what will cost more.
Yes,
correct.
We don't have the printing until months from now, so.
Okay, I just was, thank you for the clarification, I just wanted to make sure.
So is your preference, we can go ahead and award this tonight and come back and alter it in the future, that way it's official.
I would be comfortable with that as long as council is, and that way I can let the people that have received the bid know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
I think so too.
All right. Make sure that we're getting done when we need to go.
Then if that's the case, I will introduce ordinance number 38-2020, all members of council having, no, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one, aren't I?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, 39, I got it. Introduce ordinance number 39-2020, all members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Accepting proposal of Arrow Print and Copy for the 2021 City of Savannah calendar appropriating funds therefore in the amount not to exceed $9,358.48, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 39-2020 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 39-2020.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 39-2020 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 39-2020 is approved. Are there any additional committee reports to be made at this time? Agenda item 13, any committee referrals? Information items, those are the first quarter 2020 management reports you have in your council packets. Also be aware, information item B, that the senior center has asked the Sylvania Township trustees to place on the ballot the renewal of the senior center tax levy. This has been renewed regularly since the senior center was built like 20 years ago. It was a requirement of the administration at that time that before we would sell bonds and authorize the construction of the senior center, that a support levy be passed for the operation of the senior levy. That arrangement has worked very well over the years, and I certainly endorse the levy being on the ballot. It's in the boundaries of Sylvania Township, so the tax base is spread not quite as wide as if it could be the school district, but it is a township issue, and I think that's fine. Are there any additional items for council business at this time?
No.
Hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this council stands adjourned till its next regularly scheduled meeting, 2 weeks from tonight on Monday, June 15th at 7:30 p.m. Thank you all for attending.